Turkey. It is definitely a pleasure to be here. Always a pleasure anytime that you are able to take and bring a portion of the Word of God, you know, unto other fellow Christians or maybe unto a community such as you have here. I want to make a couple of points even before I start my first slide. I know very little about the church here. You know, I've known Nathan and his family for a little while, about 5 years maybe, off and on. And then I just realize I've got some connections with some others here. But, you know, the ideal of the church and anything, the history of the church, anything that's happened here, I really, you know, do not have any, you know, knowledge of. The lesson that I brought, I actually brought, created and made and brought for Lakeview Church of Christ, where I attend. So there's some points I'm going to make at the beginning to show you exactly why I created this lesson. But in the long run, the points that I have can apply to any congregation. I just don't want anyone here to feel like if something matches up with something that's happened here in the past or anything, that I'm preaching toward you here. I'm not. If it is applicable, take it to heart, because if it is applicable, it's from the Scriptures, you need it then. But don't feel bad toward me about it. Like I said, when I start this lesson, you're going to see the exact points that drove me to create this lesson. The title, as already been mentioned in the announcements, is Worshiping, and I put a little A in here, you know, Worshiping a God We Do Not Know. Because if we are not worshiping the true Almighty God, then we might as well be worshiping some other God, as in little g God. Because it makes no difference. If we're not worshiping the God, if we do not know the God and everything about Him, we might as well be worshiping one of the Greek gods, one of the Roman gods, you know, one of the Egyptian gods. Might as well be, because we do not know God, the only God. So like I said, there's a few things that sort of stacked themselves up that drove me to make this lesson. The first thing that already had me started, I was mowing the yard, had my little earbuds in, the radio was playing through, and so I was just, you know, cruising through there, cutting grass, and a song come on, and it was one of the first, you know, parts of the verse. And the song said, a girl brought up to serve a God she doesn't know. And then it went on to say within that song about some kind of a hard time that come up in her life, some big scary thing, and how she firstly thought to go pray to this God that she was taught to pray to. But she didn't know if it was even going to be worth anything. If you know, it was going to help at all. You know, and then it goes back really to that statement that she was brought up to serve a God she doesn't know. Now that little verse right in there just hit me hard, you know. I got to thinking, you know, how many people actually worship a God they really don't know? You know, and there is why there's a lack of faith, a lack of trust. The ideal of not knowing that prayer would help in that hard time. You know, we can fall into that same trap. Another thing, and I thought it was real interesting when I first come in, it was talking about the younger children being back in this congregation. At Lakeview, there were my two boys, and they went to class for a period of time, and then they've really grown up. This past spring here, we've had a couple of younger children that we could actually start up classes again. It's been years. It's been years, and really just the reason we did not have any. Same as what was discussed here when I first got here. The ideal of there were just none to have a class for. So that was getting ready to start up. I was already looking up, you know, Bible class material, going through, searching, you know, and then, you know, trying to do my due diligence to find good material and that kind of thing to present to the men. Because they had asked, hey, you know, what should we teach and that kind of thing. So I was working on that. And the whole time I'm feeling the weight of knowing whatever they're being taught should stick with them the rest of their life. So, you know, what should I even tell the men? you know, is good material. We got a leak in the back room. The roof started leaking. We had to fix the roof. And the very back room, we went to clean it out. Some of us guys, shortly after this, so this is the third thing, right, that's stacking up. And there was a lot of our older classroom material and different bulletin boards and different things that people had used in the past for the classroom material for the children. That's just where everything was stored. That's where everything was placed. And like I said, it had rained. The roof was starting, the ceiling coming in. And so what I did, I had my two boys and I had a couple other guys coming to help. So what I really did was took a chair and sat in there, and they would bring me, you know, little stacks, or I would grab stacks off a shelf and I would go through and I would look at everything that was there, because I'm the first one that I don't want to waste the Lord's money. So if there's good material, let's keep it. If it's not damaged, if it doesn't have water damage, it's good material, let's keep it. I got amazed fairly quickly by some of it, though. Just about to the point of tears with some of it. What I was amazed at was quite a bit of classroom material that was back there had denominational origin. Even as I opened the page, like started reading some of the very first parts, it actually had creeds and doctrines being taught on some of the very first pages from these different denominations. I mean, you take and look in the front cover, and it says this is distributed by, you know, it's wrote by, and it's these denominations. And then there's a stack like this, and it's got names, you know, names still on them from people that I knew had been there in the past. This was material that had been in the classrooms, maybe even in the auditorium out front. And here's the stacks after stacks of stuff that's popping up like that. And I was just like, this is so sad. And then even the other material, some that I found that was created by some members, so-called, of the church, there was a lot of very, very liberal stuff in that. And that saddened me tremendously. I was like, really? You know, some of the stuff that's taught here just isn't scriptural. But they've had these all in the classrooms. And you know, and that was just really hurting me going through that. And then the next couple points, I actually had prior knowledge to this, but I run into it again. There was a game in there called Bible Bingo. And you know, someone said, well, you know, you got to take and bring things down to the littler kids. And I agree with that. With my prior knowledge, though, that game was being used for teenagers. In particular, there were six teenage boys that were there. I actually taught them myself before I went up to Jennings to preach for a couple years. And when I left, one of the teachers, and we're going to get to the ideal of being a teacher, but one of the teachers that come in asked for them to get a certain book for him to teach. Luckily, or blessed, that one of the young men that I had taught there had enough knowledge that as the lesson was actually taught, his like second or third lesson into that book, he gets his mom to call me. He's young enough that at that time we didn't have cell phones in every kid's pocket like we do anymore, you know. But he got his mom to call me and said, hey, you know, he wants to talk with you. You got time talking? I'm like, oh, he's got time. And he said, can I read, you know, out of my Bible class book? You know, we're getting back into it again tonight. He says, this is wrong. I know it's wrong. And he started reading it off. And I was like, yeah, that's a different, you know, denomination right there. And I said, can you turn to the front of the book? And he did, like, you know, where the copyright and all this. I said, who wrote that? And he started reading it off, and yeah. It was from a Baptist group, and it was Baptist teaching on baptism. And I'm like, I am so glad that you caught that. He's like, what do I need to do? He said, can you call him up? I said, I'm no longer a member there. And actually, I had left Lakeview because of some error that was happening there. I said, no, you're going to need to step up. His daddy's not a member. I said, you're going to need to just step on up and present this to some other men and have that book removed from that classroom. And they did. Well, that teacher then picked up Bible Bingo. And that's what they did every Sunday morning and every Wednesday night in Bible class. And they did that for years. You know, that was Bible Bingo. There's some other things that I was told by some of the same boys that's in that class that they had been taught at even a younger level. Some things that are just absolutely incorrect. One thing was that the different color of people in this world, it was because Noah's sons were three different colors. You know, there was a black son, a white son, and a brown son. And here's these boys, they're at the teenage level, and this is what they believe, you know? And they're thinking, that is the gospel truth on this. You know, and it's not the gospel truth. The Bible doesn't say that. Could it be that case? You know, the different variations of color? It could be. Now, I understand why they sort of pick up that route and go, because of how they dispersed. You know, the areas that each son went towards and they raised their family. I understand that, but that's not a biblical truth. And there were a lot of other things that come up over and over, you know, that they were taught. And I was thinking, you know, that's so sad. That's sad that this is the background that they are receiving. Now, with some of those names on those books, and then just thinking about those six young men, you know, I started thinking when I was looking through all that material and all that play stuff, because there was a lot of just play stuff back there. You know, I was thinking, looking at all the names on those workbooks, and they were some adult classroom books. And I was like, where are all these people? You know, why are we down to like 30-some in a town as big as Lake City, Florida? Why are we that low? And then we've got all of these different families, but where are the children? Where are the grandchildren? And in a lot of cases, where are the great-grandchildren? Where are they at? And then you think, you know, about those six fellas that was in that classroom with me. There's only one that's faithful. And he's had a very hard road to plow, as we would say. He's left the church really twice and come back twice. You know, but you know, after I left, that's what they were left with, Bible bingo. All the other different classrooms that was even below there, some of them my wife taught, my mom taught, just for a period of a year or so, all of those youngins are gone too. By the time I come back to preach at Lakeview, the whole lot of them is gone but the one. And then he fell away and come back. And you're thinking, how sad is that? But, you know, it's not something new. It's not just localized to Lakeview. I mean, you know, people ask me all the time, why do you think we're losing our young folk? I think that's a big reason right there. And, you know, and again, it's not something new. Let's think about Judges. Judges 2 and 10 says, when all the generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the works which he had done for Israel. All the way back to Judges. You know, why don't that generation, why don't they know God? Why don't they know his works? They wasn't taught. They were raised, really, because their worship continued. We know it did. We know they still followed through with some worship unto the Lord, sacrifices and different things. But they were raised to worship a God they didn't know. So when the older generation was gone, we don't really know God. We're not going to follow his commandments. We're not going to do his laws and go through all this. We're just not going to do it. So my question that I want to start really the lesson on initially is, how does this happen? How do we raise up generation, maybe after generation, that does not know God? How does that happen? The first thing that I have to point out is what I just did in Judges, what I was making the point of with that material, is knowledge was not handed down properly. It just wasn't handed down properly. You know, I know even as I was growing up, the older men, they take and make a point to help encourage you, to strengthen you, to take and make sure you've got the knowledge to be able to carry on the next generation. I was very blessed at Jennings where I was raised. We actually had three preachers, and then I started filling in. Even at the age of 13, I obeyed the gospel. We had four guys that could preach. One was on vacation, two was on vacation, one was at a gospel meeting, and the other had a heart attack at 4 a.m. So they called Dad and me and said, we need someone to preach. And really all I got up and done was read the book of Ruth twice. 13. But after that though, you know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being able to speak and teach. And the older men sort of took me under the wing. And they made sure I had every opportunity possible. And if I said something wrong, they corrected me on it. You know, and they encouraged me on it. And they give me extra knowledge when I needed it. And they pushed you to be that way. But there are so many groups that are not that way. I know Lakeview wasn't that way. When I went to Lakeview, when I was in our early 20s, because we already lived in Lake City, I had some of those young men actually got baptized while I was teaching their class. And the older men wouldn't even let them in the business meeting. Just wouldn't even let them in at all. They said, this is men's work. I'm like, but they got to learn to be men. They got to learn how to make good decisions. I said, you can't tell them to go out there and sit with their mamas. And then when you're gone, expect them to come in and make good godly decisions. They have no clue what to do. You know, and then even like the idea of singing and short talks and different things that could be available for those young converts as you teach them and you strengthen them and you mold them, they just wasn't going to let that happen. You know, and again, we've got them gone now, don't we? They're out of here. You know, they wasn't invested in anything. Why? Because the knowledge wasn't handed down. They didn't get that love handed down. You know, we talked about that in our song service, not that love. The love to serve God. The love that God has for us, but the love we have to have for God. That is passed through knowledge. That is shown. That is demonstrated by the older generation. Amen. Deuteronomy 4, verse 9. Got a few verses here in a row now. Deuteronomy 4, verse 9. Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. So see, that's to the older generation. You take heed to yourself, and don't you forget. But here's the next part of that. And teach them to your children and your grandchildren. See, that's passing that love. That's passing the respect to God down. That's moving it down. Don't you forget it, and don't let those that come after you forget it. But see, when we do that, when we don't pass that forward for a lot of different reasons, we lose them. Deuteronomy 6 and 7 says, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Notice the word diligently. That's not just teach them to your children. You know, Moses, I believe here, would be stressing, put forth a greater effort in doing this. It's of a necessity. It's absolutely needed. It's what he's trying to stress here. It's not just something we should do. It's an absolute thing we have to do. Be diligent in that job. This is a job given to parents in particular and grandparents. You make sure they know. You make sure you demonstrate it in what you do. We're going to talk more about that too. But 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 3. I'm not going to dump everything on parents. You know, because you can do that, right? You can say, okay, parents, you know, do a better job teaching your kids and they won't fall. No, it can't be just parents. You know, they talk about it takes a whole tribe to raise a child. It takes a whole congregation to raise children unto God too. All right? 2 Chronicles 15, 3. So preachers, anybody that preaches in here, you know, watch your toes. For a long time, Israel has been without the true God. Why? Why? Why are they without the true God? Without a teaching priest and without law. There's a lot of preachers nowadays and has been for some time. They do a real good job up here entertaining. Real good, yeah. You know, we like those, right? You know, I've been told this. You know, we like a preacher. You know, he's up here like 15 minutes, makes us all feel good, and then he sets down. That's not a teaching priest in that sense. Now, you can also get a preacher that gets up here and he does sort of a real good job of covering a few topics over and over. We had one of those at Lakeview sometime before I came. I was bound and determined. He had four lessons. He brought the same four over and over and over, just different variations. But that's as far as he got. When I started preaching there, I started teaching a lot in the Old Testament, New Testament, showed how you needed both, you know, to have the full story on things. I actually had quite a few families come up and say, Verlin, I've never learned anything in the Old Testament. The preacher we used to attend, like where they used to attend, said he never went to the Old Testament. Now, he might like reference, okay, this is over in that. But to actually go in and preach Judges, go in and talk through Daniel, and go through every one of the prophecies and how that was going to relate to the nations coming up, you know, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Greeks, the Romans, and really show how it goes all the way up to Christ. We've never heard any of that. One of the ladies there, she said, Verlin, she said, when you started Daniel, she said, I hated coming to every one of them at the beginning. She said, I didn't want to hear it. She said, by the time you got done, she said, I have to hear it. She knew that she had been missing that. But not only her own children, they were there, one of them, and her grandchildren, two grandboys. I know their dad told me he was scared that he'd lose them both. You know, lose them both to the world. One of them's teaching my class tonight. And the other one's a preacher at Westside in Gainesville. But I truly believe it's because they didn't have the knowledge they needed to begin with, to have the love to continue on, to have the desire to continue on. But if you are got guys that get up here in this pulpit and they're not teaching the entire Word of God, you don't have a teaching priest in this sense. They're not giving the law to the congregation. They're just up here to entertain you, and you don't need an entertainer. We got enough funny, silly, crazy stuff in this world to entertain you. Come here for the truth. And I know Nathan will do a good job for that. He's preached at Lakeview for me. I know he does. Psalms 34 and 11. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. I brought a lesson some years back. I called it Love Lessons. And you know, there was a big push at that time for everything to be what I call a love lesson. Let's talk about nothing but the love of God. How well He loves us, all the blessings He gives to us. Well, where's the other side of God? Where's the fearful side, the wrathful side, the one that's going to pour judgment out on the wicked? He's just as big a part of the Bible as the loving God. Where's He at? So you take children coming up, and they have no fear for God at all? You know, all they're like, you know, He loves me. You know, I can do whatever I want because He loves me. Isn't that like what most of all denominations preach? Just live however you want. The Lord loves you. As long as you accept Him, you're good. Well, then we can take and let our children go off to college, right? And then when they get to college, they get all of this information from the world. And then they say, well, you know, the Lord still loves me. And then, you know, they just start drifting further and further away. And the biggest reason, they have no fear for God. They have more fear for that professor that may give them an F for telling the truth than they do for God. The next point I want to make is righteousness was not lived. You know, how does that happen? How do you lose these whole generations? Righteousness was not lived. Some verses to begin with. Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given Himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. So Paul is saying, you know, be ye imitators of me as I am of God. You know, but be imitators of God. All right, that means if Paul is an imitator of God, and I know that's another verse, and he's asking them to be imitators of God, that passes right on. Do we not understand that? So like our children in our own families, you know, do they see righteous living day in and day out? You know, when they come to services, do they see righteous living day in and day out? What do they see? What is portrayed in front of them? You know, as the children of Israel, you know, they started growing and got bigger, you know, and they would take and fall away from the Lord, and then the Lord would send different nations unto them, and they would take and sort of wipe them out a little bit, put them into slavery. Then they would pray and beg to God, and He would let them come back. And then when they got sort of in that peaceful stance, then their children started seeing other things that their parents went back to. And then you got another generation once again, because their parents didn't live righteous. Now, they were righteous at the moment when they were begging God and seeking God out, but then they got away from that. And the children see, you know, children pick up on everything. I make this point. Those of you that's got a Ford, don't feel sorry toward me or feel bad, but I have had nothing but bad luck with Fords. All right? My boys have been raised to hear me say I hate a Ford. So if you got a Ford, that's up to you. All right? But the thing is, up till this past year when my oldest son started driving, you know, he'd never been in any of them. He had no clue about one from the other. He just knew Daddy didn't like a Ford. So guess what? He don't like a Ford. You know, but you see what happens, right? If he watches me and the way I live, it's going to affect him and how he's going to live. So you can't say, why are children not still in the church? Why are they not living a righteous life? Well, what are you showing them as a life? Another verse, Deuteronomy 4, 9. Only take heed to yourself. You know, I've already been there. And diligently keep yourself. And then the last part, teach them. You know, teach them to your children. You know, if you're not taking heed to yourself to make sure you're being the person you're supposed to be, I guarantee they are. And they're going to take and imitate you. So yeah, you can't say, well, you know, the preaching wasn't good enough. The Bible classes wasn't good enough. But maybe mom and daddy wasn't good enough. You know, and then it does come back to the church. Maybe they really like, you know, certain members in the church building. And then they see them part of other things and doing other things. You know, well, if it's fine for them, then that's what I'm going to do. I know my oldest son, the fellow that's teaching class for me tonight, he would always dress in these really nice suits and had these really nice cufflinks. And by the time he got 12 or 13, he was bound determined he wanted to look as nice as that fellow. You know, and I'm like, well, we don't have the pockets for that. But we found some. We when John Zellner actually gave him some nice cufflinks. Some of them back in the 70s. But, you know, everybody knows John, loves John. But he gave him some cufflinks. And, you know, every service, he was like in a three-piece suit. I mean, dressed to the hilt, looking nice. And I remember I come up to that fella, and I said, you see that? I said, he's watching everything you do. Remember that. I said, because he is acting like you. I said, he's not acting like his daddy. I only put this coat on when I have to be up here. You know, I said, he's acting like you. I said, watch what you do, because he's going to be like you. Yeah. So think about that. You know, when we start talking about the children, you know, the preacher up here, you know, the little kids, they're listening to you. They're watching how you act. They're watching how you present yourself. You know, just around talking. Romans 8:5 says, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. One thing that I know has led some of the young folk at Lakeview disappear over the years is the priority or what the mind has been set on or allowed to be set on. One of the biggest things that I know has been a problem there has been sports. You know, no matter how you feel, you know, about the sports, but there were young men there that their parents always let them miss a Wednesday night if there was something to do with sports going on. We had a young man, baseball, you know, he would miss for that baseball. That's just when they scheduled the baseball games, Wednesday nights. He was always at those ball games, but you better believe he wasn't in services. He was at the ball games. You know, wanted to go to a bowling tournament. He was really good at bowling. Wanted to go to a bowling tournament down around South Florida near Miami that way. Well, guess what? He bowled all day one Sunday. His parents were fine with that. Hey, he's a great bowler. Yeah, he might be a great bowler, but guess what? He's not in the church. He's not a faithful member no more. Yeah. You know, but yeah, he's probably still a good bowler. Might still be pretty good at baseball. But yeah, he's not in services no more. You know, we've had some that were in band, and they would go on these band trips and had opportunities to go to parades and all. Oh, yeah, look, I'm so excited about them going. But they're missing services. You know, whether the travel, whether whatever. You know, we've had parents that say, well, we're going on a vacation, but they don't attend services while they're on vacation. So, you know, their children are like, I don't know why little Johnny isn't part of the church no more. You know what I want to tell him? He's on vacation. Because, you know, when you were raising him up, you took vacations 3 times a year and you never went to services. He's just on a long vacation right now. You know, that's what you want to tell them. You know, because that is what their minds were set on. I'll take and put God in his place when I think it's worth it. But when I got something more important to me, that's what I'm going to do. Hunting falls in that category. I had an uncle, you know, he worked all week. The best time to catch smallmouth bass in Kentucky was first thing in the morning. Right as the day broke, get right up near some of those cliffs and catch those smallmouth bass. Well, he knew the Lord's Supper was offered on Sunday night. So guess what? He's casting that pole every Sunday morning, then coming in acting like he's a member of the church every Sunday night. And a lot don't want to hear this one, but how about work? You know, you take and you fuss at your kids, they go off to college, and then they never come back to the church. Well, you know, what's college for? It's to learn a career, right? Well, as you raise them up, how often do you miss services for work? Was it quite often? Because what you're telling them is work is the most important thing to do. So then when I go to college, got to get that degree because I got to get a job. I got to work. That's my most important thing to do. So they do, and they start serving God to go to classes, whatever. Then they come out, they get a career. That's their main focus. Where was God? Well, you taught them that work was more important. They're doing a good job at work, but not serving God. According to the flesh, they set their minds on the things of the flesh. If you want good spiritual children and grandchildren, you need to make sure you're showing them that your mindset is on the spiritual. And maybe, just maybe, theirs will be as well. Another point on how this happens, God was not held at the correct level of reverence. Now, this has got a lot of overlap, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time there. But in the services, the reverence toward God, making sure you're there every time, and that it's a priority. I was truly blessed with good parents. I was. They were at every service. When those doors were open, it didn't matter where we attended, whether it was in Kentucky, whether it was in Jennings, whether it was at Lakeview, it did not matter. If the doors were open, they were there 30 minutes early. And that's what they taught us. You know, and I'd ask Dad, "Dad, why do we come so early?" He says, "If you're on time, you're already late." That's the way Daddy thought of it. He says, "If you're early, you're on time." You know what I got to learn as I got older? I started reading David. When David says, "I was glad when they said, let's go up to the house of the Lord." My daddy was happy to be there 30 minutes early. And I learned that. Always be there. Reverence. Reverence to God. But even in our day-to-day language, think about how much the Lord's name is used in vain anymore. Just think about how much it's used in vain. There is no reverence for God. And that slips in among us. You know, not using the words out of disrespect for God, just examples like gosh, golly, goodness, geez. Those things just fly out our mouth. We don't even think about those, but that is still showing lack of reverence toward God. Psalms 89 and 7. God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be held in reverence by all those around him. Notice all. You know, a lot of times they expect the preacher to dress and act in a certain manner, but how about everybody in the building? You know, what level of reverence does everybody, all, show to God? You know, I know of a congregation, their preacher decided that he was tired of the whole suit and tie deal. He started coming in t-shirts and shorts to preach all of his lessons. Yeah, and they end up having to get rid of him. But I'm thinking, where is the reverence toward God? Where's the reverence even to your brothers and sisters in Christ? You got any respect for them to act in that manner? Hebrews 12:28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably. Now, how do we serve him acceptably? With reverence and godly fear. You know, our children, just like I said, you know, they mimic us. When they see God held on the utmost highest pedestal in our life, they're going to remember that. It's going to stick with them. And you know what? It is really hard to tear something off of that high pedestal and replace it with something else. But if God is way down here below a whole lot of other things in their life, it's real easy for them to just slide it over on the shelf and say, "I like a lot of these other things better." Got to have that reverence. Well, as we start wrapping up, how do we fix it? You know, it's real easy for me to get up here, you know, on a soapbox and fuss. You know, but how do we fix it? How do we make it better? The first thing I want to make a point of, you know, and this is pointing right back at me right here, right now. Understand your place in this. Understand your own place in the problem. All right. So definitely, you know, we can start with parents. I got two boys. I already mentioned that. Start with, you know, parents. You know, are you teaching them? Are you showing them the right kind of level of respect and reverence toward God? Are you living a righteous life before them? Because they are the main thing that they see is you. And everything that you do and say, you know, that's making the greatest impact. But how about when they come to services? You know, each and every one of you here, when they come to services, do they see you here every time? Or do they come up and ask somebody, "Where's so-and-so?" Oh, they're at work. Or, oh, they're doing this. Or, oh, they're at Disney World tonight. You know, big fireworks, you know, tonight down there. You know, they pick up on that. Oh, well, you know, I like so-and-so. I think the world of them. It's fine for them to miss. That sticks with them. You know, your place in this, you know. And it goes past that, not just the example that you're showing, but let's step it up to the teaching. Definitely the preacher. Sorry, Nathan. The preacher, you know, understand your place in this. You know, you've got to be elevating yourself up. You've got to be bringing that knowledge. They've got to know the truth. Don't just entertain. Don't get up here and just teach pretty little stories. You know, get up here and teach it like the Bible teaches it. In the classroom, In the classroom, I know at Lakeview, I've been told by multiple people, and really my whole family just got shoved in there because they said we're all tired of teaching. So my mom, my sister, my mom, all of us, even my brother, you know, he's like, I don't know, I don't even like to read, but hey, I can talk to somebody. You know, he took a Bible class. And I've had others say, you know, I can't even read the Bible well. Talking about an older gentleman. He says, but they put me in a Bible class because nobody else wanted it. You know what? If you do not have teachers that are truly capable of bringing that material, maybe even at the level the preacher does, don't put them in those classrooms. That's not their place. Those little rooms, those rooms are not for babysitting. You know, that might as well be over at the Baptist with the daycare center. You know, playground set out back, you know, put in the nice little chain link, let them go out and play because we don't want to deal with them. Yeah, that's what happens with a lot of classrooms in churches, right? Yeah, they become, you know, little daycare centers, babysitting. Yeah, you know, she's really good with kids. Let's put them in there with her. But does she know the Bible? You know, she's got a pretty voice. She'll sing them a lot of pretty songs. But does she know the Bible? Is she able to teach the Bible? Is he able to teach the Bible? You know, especially when it gets up to like the middle high school boys and all. They're like, yeah, they need a man. Put a man in there. You know, and then they'll snatch some guy out of the auditorium and put him in there. And he's like, I don't know. You know, they just want a man in here with y'all. You know, but they're thinking automatically it don't matter. You know, he doesn't even know it. Didn't matter to him to learn it. Doesn't matter to them out there to put someone in here to teach us. We don't know anything. He don't know anything. You know, what are you teaching them? You know, understand your place. Men, elders, I don't know. Y'all may have elders. I don't know this. You know, but when it comes to the curriculum itself, you know, if you're taking and just getting some book because it looks good on the outside and you're putting it in a classroom, you're doing a disjustice. I did have a moment when I got here to look over here on this shelf. I'm impressed. I'm pretty pleased with that shelf over there. There's some good material on that shelf. Yeah. You know, not like that stuff I dug out of the back room. There's some good men that's been writing some stuff over there. Yeah, that's some good stuff. But you know, elders or men making the decision, if you're going to have something taught in any classroom here, you know what needed to be done first? You need to take that book home yourself. You need to open it up. You need to go through the whole book yourself and make sure that there's only truth in that book. And if it ain't, you take that book that you just bought and you throw it in the garbage and you go find you something else to teach them kids because you ain't wanting to teach them false doctrine. So yeah, understand your place. There's so many places we can be. Understand your place. You know, and the next point is knowledge at every single level. You know, don't just say, okay, Nathan is a great preacher. He's got great knowledge. We're happy to have him. How's your knowledge? You know, when one of these young folk, they come up and ask a question of you, can you give them a good biblical answer? Or are you going to say, well, let me wait till Nathan's got time to talk to you about it? Automatically, you know what that young folk, see, I don't know if y'all know this. I'm a high school geometry teacher. All right, I teach geometry online. I can tell you this, if a student comes up and they ask you a question about your subject, and you're like, I don't know, give me a few days to look it up, they've already lost complete interest in the whole thing. They could care less. They're like, you know, if he don't know, why should I know it? Why should I even care to know it? So yeah, young folk come up and say, you know, why do we do this? Why do we dress this way? Why do we talk this way? Why do we come to service this way? And then you say, well, let's get Nathan to talk to you about it. You've lost them. That's it. They're gone. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to go talk to Nathan about it. They want to talk to you. And most likely it's because they look up to you. And they want you to tell them why you do what you do. And if you don't have the knowledge to do that, you just let them down, maybe for a lifetime. Now that's rough, ain't it? But it's the truth. Knowledge at every single level. So yeah, that is every classroom. That's the auditorium. That's every member. And definitely that's the preacher. And let's always make sure that God is held at the highest level of reverence. That's in every word that comes out of our mouth, every action, everything that they can see around us. We got to live that righteous life. And you know, with that righteousness, we do elevate the Lord. You know, just demonstrate correct priorities. You know, if something else is more important than serving God, they're going to take that and they're going to set the same priorities in their life. They might rearrange something, but I can promise you, if you're not showing that God's at the top, they're never going to show God at the top. He's just going to slide further down. And that's why we get judges to where they are so far away from God that God has to bring an enemy in to try to correct some of them. Worst thing is, the lesson I brought this Sunday is the idea of, do we need to lament? Because the Lord may be bringing in some enemies to do a little bit of correcting here in this country. You know, live that righteous life. I've made that point. So, you know, the title, you know, worshiping a God we do not know. You know, I've talked about the young folk, but I also mentioned, you know, those of us with a little bit more age on us. Are we here tonight worshiping a God that we really don't know? If your level of knowledge is not what it's supposed to be, if your life is not living a righteous life, you may well just be worshiping a God you don't know. You're here. You're going through the motion. But are you truly worshiping Him the way He deserves to be worshiped tonight? Maybe you've become a child of God and you've gone back into the world. Take this time to fix that. But definitely, if you're here tonight and you have not become a child of God, if you know exactly what it takes to become a child of God, you know the commitment that it takes, the lifelong life that you must give to Him, the service you have to take and give weekly, daily, by the minute to Him, then act on it tonight. Become a child of God. If you don't know what it takes to become a child of God, meet me at the back door. I'll go through it. Nathan's happy to go through it. And we'll sit here as long as you need us to. And we'll go through the whole Bible we need to tonight till you want to be satisfied that you're ready to become a child of God. We're happy to help. We're happy to help tonight if you'll come forward. As together we stand and sing.